Welcome, everyone. And I think I just about got to say hi to everyone. That's one of my goals, to become a nicer person. I'm still a work in progress, believe it or not. So really, it's nice to be back here. I think we figured out that the last time I was here was like June or July, something around that. And, you know, my schedule just kind of rotates through different places. I usually travel once a month out of New York to teach around the country. And it's just really nice to be back here. For me, it's also kind of selfish to just get out of the buzz of New York a little bit. My body needs the healing here and other places. So I think in a minute we'll start with just some meditation, just to sit together, just to let our body settle, to come into a little bit of presence together, and then see what comes out tonight on this topic. So I chose this topic on developing a calm body and clear mind, what that means from a Buddhist perspective, why in the hell we would want to do that in the first place. And really how to do that from a perspective of what I call embodied awareness. And so I'll discuss what that means. Tonight's topic is also the topic for tomorrow. So the idea here is that tonight is kind of more the introduction, like a teaser, hopefully, maybe a little more. And then it's going to lead into a more in-depth discussion and practice tomorrow. So tomorrow's really the intensive on this. So if you find some of the things really helpful tonight, or just really intriguing to you, and if you can clear your schedule tomorrow, please join us. It's from 10 to 3, right? With a lunch break probably. So let's sit a little bit. I just came off of two planes, and so I do okay with one plane, but when there's two landings, something really agitates my system, and I tried to make it up with caffeine, and that probably wasn't a good idea. So I'm basically like a recovering neurotic Jew at heart. So there's kind of that. We were talking about trauma and like inherited genetic trauma. So I feel definitely there's some inherited genetic trauma there, hoping to change through Buddhist practice and meditation. It's work in progress. So let's sit a little bit. So just find a seat that's relaxed yet alert for you, something that you can preserve for about 20 minutes or so. And if you've never meditated before, I'll kind of introduce the practice. And maybe if you've never meditated but you heard what it's about, I just invite you to throw those ideas out. And if you have meditated before and you think you know what meditation's about, I also invite you to let go of those ideas so we can come fresh here tonight, yeah? So just take a moment just to settle in the body. This might mean a little bit of movement that's gentle for you, that's nurturing. Maybe rolling the shoulders a little bit, stretching your neck. Just start to feel what it feels like to be in the body and settled, with a little bit of a straight back, but not too tense. The chin just tucked just a little bit, letting the spine elongate. This just helps us to stay awake and alert. And as you close your eyes, feel free to open them at any point if you feel like you're getting sleepy or getting too distracted. I actually meditate mostly with my eyes open, so you can experiment with that. And we're just going to take a moment to begin to come into the body. And so we're going to do a brief body scan. But this is also a chance for us to start to get to know the body, a place that unfortunately many of us don't familiarize ourselves with. And it's not our fault necessarily. It's just that we're not taught how to do that. And so we're going to start to practice inhabiting the space of the body more. We're going to start to practice what it means to become present with the body. And here I'm just talking about the feeling body. So as you bring your attention to the crown of the head, see if you can just sense that area for a moment. So we're beginning to inhabit that space. And when you notice any tension in the body as we move down, so when we, for instance, move into the forehead and eyes in a moment, just notice where you can soften, where you can relax a little bit in a kind way. not about finding this perfect space where we don't suffer. That's actually a misnomer about meditation. It's actually about building the tools so we know how to suffer skillfully. We know how to work with suffering. We know how to know it, as the Buddha said in the First Noble Truth. So really tonight, what I think my goal is to really present you really practical tools. It's not about kind of woo-woo, new agey kind of ideas here. It's about very practical ways of understanding how our bodies and minds work and how to really make life meaningful. So as you begin to scan down from the top of the head, we're going to meet the muscles around the eyes and forehead, just noticing what that feels like for you, if that can loosen, if it's a little tense. For me personally, when I'm a little tired, I tend to squeeze or tighten my eyes. So notice if that's the case for you, just inviting that to relax. Same as we begin to move down into the cheeks and jaw, the jaw being another place where we tend to hold tension. It's also a place where we actually hold aggression. And so here it's not about denying our aggression. It's about understanding and knowing aggression. And of course, as we get to know it, we start to know why and how it's causing suffering for us. That's the main point here. So releasing the jaw, one tip for that is just to let your lips part a little bit, just about the size of a rice grain. So now we're kind of inhabiting this space of our head, mostly the muscles around the face. So now just want to welcome you or invite you into feeling the rest of the head, the middle of the head where the brain sits, just sensing into there. Also sensing into the back of the head, the back of the skull, and down into the neck and throat. Just noticing how your throat feels right now. Does it feel constricted and open, or does it feel relaxed and at ease? So is there constriction? Is there tension? Is there openness, spaciousness? And here, the whole idea is we're kind of checking the inner weather. It's not a matter of pushing something out that's uncomfortable or trying to bring in something that's more pleasurable. It's about knowing what's arising right now, becoming aware of it. So I call this kind of our inner weather check. In a moment, we'll start to work with moods and emotions. So if you can soften in the throat, if it feels tense, go ahead and do that. It might mean just offering a little bit of kindness there. Kindness to any tension that's arising, any constriction that's arising. From the throat, we'll begin to move into our shoulders, arms, and hands. Again, this is a place for us where we also tend to hold a lot of tension. So just feel your shoulders. And of course, I know this is not easy for everyone, so just give it a shot. Of course, the mind or the thinking mind is going to distract you. Not a big deal. Just bring your attention back to the body. And just use my voice as a guide. And so as you connect with the shoulders, see where you can relax. See where you can loosen or soften any tension that's arising. Same as you move through your arms and hands. And then moving down from the shoulders, we're going to start to enter our torso. Coming down along the spine, we're going to start to move into just our heart center right in the middle of the chest. So not our physical heart, which is more towards the left. We're just going to sense the space right in the middle of the body, right behind the sternum. Just hang out there for a moment, just noticing how that feels right now. Just checking the inner weather there. Does it feel constricted in the heart, or does it feel more open? And again, if it's constricted, don't worry about it too much. Just be present with that, if you can. And if it's really uncomfortable, you can also shift your attention to somewhere else. And from here, we'll begin to move down the mid-body. So we're still scanning down along the spine and eventually come to our belly. Just hanging out there for a moment. So I want to invite you here to soften and loosen in the area of the belly if it's tense for us through just relaxing the gut. A lot of us tense up and kind of suck our belly in. Or we're trying to, like me, trying to fool people that you have a six-pack. I don't think I'm fooling anybody. So don't worry, nobody's looking at you. Everybody's got their eyes closed. So you can just let your belly relax and kind of even puff out a little bit like a balloon. Just notice how that feels, how it's an inner tension that we begin to release, and it kind of allows us to ground a little bit more to our seat. See if you can notice that shift as you do that. And then we'll begin to move down into the pelvic area and into the hips. And then connect with our seat. So whether you're seated on the floor or in a chair, just notice the sensations in your seat. Notice how it feels to your skin, muscles, and bones. Again, all of this is just as much of a raw awareness or presence as we can. Of course, the thinking mind is going to want to try to name it, label it. It's going to want to say, why the hell did I come here tonight? What am I doing? Possibly, hopefully not. So whatever the thinking mind wants to say, it's fine. It's just chatter, actually. But what we're trying to do is draw our attention back to the body each time we notice that chatter. Just in a really kind way, really soft way. And moving down through the legs, knees, calves, noticing the sensation and connection to the floor now as we finally connect with our feet, toes. We're just going to hang out here for a few moments. I don't know about Nashville natives, but in New York, I noticed many people live from the head. They're very rarely in the lower body, in the feet, legs, in their seat. So whatever your particular conditioning is, see if you could just work with that right now. Whether you're used to this or not, we're simply just going to stay with a presence, feeling the ground below us, feeling our seat. It's nothing special, it's nothing spiritual, it's just feeling the body and feeling the connection to the ground. It may feel a little foreign for some of us at first, but actually it starts to feel really good after a little while. You might notice the body can suddenly find a space or a home to just relax. So we're just going to spend a few moments here, but maybe in another practice we'll come back here for longer. So what I want you to begin to specifically notice here is your connection to the earth. We're going to draw on that in a moment. And for some of you, maybe you don't have much connection to the earth. It's just like a cold, lifeless ground that you don't think about so often. For some of you, you might be an avid kind of nature person. You like to be out in the wilderness, and so you have a strong connection with the earth. Or we might be somewhere in between. But either way, just allow the body to connect with it, to acknowledge you're sitting or on the floor, you're sitting in a chair, and you're connected to it. And that we're never not connected to it. It's one constant in our life until we die that we don't often notice. It's one relationship that we have that we forget sometimes. So as you contemplate that a little, just be with the body in this presence with the earth, just connecting with it. And then we're going to connect that to the breath. So I'm guessing a majority of you are familiar with using the breath as an anchor for meditation. And here we're going to be connecting with both the breath and the body. And so as we breathe, it's actually the body that breathes. And I want you to begin to notice where you're feeling your breath. Just breathing in gently through the nose, out gently through the nose. Again, there's nothing holy or spiritual to this practice. We're just simply using the breath to connect with the body, to connect with ourselves, to connect with this moment. And if you'd like, I'm going to invite you into a practice in connection with the earth, where when we breathe up, we're going to breathe up through the feet and legs and into the lower abdomen. So remember, I asked you to let your abdomen just pop out a little bit. And now we're going to actually fill it with air. We're going to fill it with the breath. So on the in-breath, we breathe up from the earth and into the lower belly. And on the out-breath, settle and let yourself just be grounded back into it. So if there's a place to be aware of, it's the place right around the navel. You can even put one hand on there if you'd like. You can place your left or right hand, whichever one feels more comfortable. And just feel the belly as it expands and as it contracts. And all I want you to do for the next 10 minutes or so is to feel. Just allow yourself to connect with that feeling. For some of you, this may be really pleasant. For some of you, it might be actually unpleasant. And for others, it may be just neutral, neither pleasant or unpleasant. And I just want to let you know all of those are okay. There's no way you should be feeling right now. See if you can allow a connection with how you are feeling. And just be really kind to yourself here, which means give yourself a lot of room. If this is hard for you and you're noticing a lot of distraction, just be kind to that distraction. But also put the effort in to come back to the abdomen, to notice the breathing body here. And so this is a practice, meaning it's not an experience we're trying to have, it's our effort we're putting in to being present with ourselves, to being present with the breath and the body. And really it's about showing up for yourself. And I am going to come back to that theme again and again tonight and tomorrow, which is a pretty sensitive one because unfortunately, it seems like a lot of us don't know how to properly care for ourselves. not in the sense of brushing our teeth or taking a shower, but in the sense of that we are fully lovable, that we're also worthy and valuable as a person just for being born. We don't have to do anything special to prove our value. And somehow we've lost this in our culture, and it gets all mixed up. And of course, our struggles in life, our contractions, trauma also affects this. So we're going to talk about all these areas this weekend. But for now, just the simple seed of, can you love yourself by just showing up for yourself right now, putting in a gentle effort, letting go of expectations. It's not about being perfect at meditation, it's about showing up. Showing up with whatever's arising, including boredom. Meditation is boring, and that's okay. I'm giving you permission to be bored. There's nothing wrong with being bored. There's a famous Tibetan teacher who used to call the practice of meditation cool boredom. What a beautiful way to express it. So over the next 10 minutes as we practice, see if you can just let your body relax, but stay aware, stay present of the breathing body, of the belly expanding, contracting. If you'd like, breathing up from the earth and grounding back into it. And you'll sense the body sinking in, the mind settling. Just sustain a presence with that. You can take a break every few minutes just to refresh. And if you'd like, you can connect with another object, like the sounds of the cars going by. Connect with that for a few minutes, then come back to the body. So this really isn't about being rigid, it's about being present. And we're cultivating that. We're not going to be fully present right away. So we have to give ourselves a lot of room and kindness. So as we continue to observe the breathing body, just offering a sense of gentle presence with it, can you also begin to observe thoughts as they arise, sounds? So normally we are caught up in our mental formations, thoughts. Meditation or meditative awareness is the practice of growing our muscle of observation. What seems so personal actually becomes more workable, more flexible. When we drop into the body, we allow the body to settle in its own time, in its own space. And so what do you need to do in your practice right now, just in our last 5 minutes? Do you need to relax a little bit more, to loosen a little bit more? Do you need to put in a little bit more effort? Just see where you're at. There's a real art to relaxing in meditation. It's not an easy thing actually to get. It takes some time. The reason I brought up the term embodied awareness for this weekend is that it happens in the body. You can't will yourself to do it through the thinking mind. At some point you have to connect with the body. Just the raw feeling in it. So if you connect with one thing tonight, make it the body. Make it a place in the body that feels like new territory or something you don't normally inhabit. Just see how kind you can be to yourself while you're inhabiting it. Which means at some point we have to drop our judgment of good and bad, and just be. We have to notice when we're setting ourselves up for more constriction, getting stuck in our patterns. And we notice those patterns as they arise. This is really the strength of meditation. Contrary to popular belief, meditation is not just about calming down. But we also need calmness in order to have insight into our experience, in order to notice our conditioning and patterns, and to wake up from them. Really, in my observation of the world, this is one of the kindest things we can do for ourselves. It's one of the most compassionate, loving things. So in the next few breaths, we're going to begin to shift out of our practice. So I like to call this the period of bridging our formal meditation back out into our day or evening. So we don't just come out of meditation like we're waking up from sleep. We actually bridge it, letting the awareness extend, sort of like if you hit a note on a piano. You just let it extend as long as it will and can. So see now if you can become or invite your awareness and observation simply to just bear witness to the body as a whole. So we've been mainly staying with the lower abdomen and the belly. See now if you can feel your feet and legs on the cushion. See if you can sense your heart, your shoulders, your head, just slowly at your own pace. From here, the sounds around you, the lack of sound. Can you feel also the space with your eyes closed? Can you feel the space in front and back of you? And normally when we're told to open our eyes, it means the meditation is finished. Here it is not finished. So what I want to invite you into is, as you open your eyes, just let your gaze meet the ground. So just looking about 4 or 5 feet in front of you, and stay with a still body for a few moments, seeing if you can just preserve a sense of the body. If you'd like, you can just stay in your belly if it's too hard to be aware of the body as a whole. And just let your eyes gently open now. And we're still meditating. We're still present. We're still aware. And so this thing we call meditation that seems so special starts to become more integrated, just a part of our humanness that we can engage. So please open your eyes if you haven't and try this with me. Take in the room through your vision. It's a little easier if you look towards the ground. It'll be less distracting. Just try to stay with the body and try to stay with this moment. We hear the cars go by. We feel the air on our skin. And then just let your body move in a way that feels nurturing right now, something that may start with some micro movements, just shifting side to side, front to back. Can move into rolling your shoulders or gently stretching your neck. And see if you can preserve awareness here, just like the note on a piano, that if we don't dampen it, it extends. Okay. How was that? Yeah? So what does that mean when you do that?
It's still going, right? You didn't say stop.
What? Still, if you can stay with that and not lose that, you'll be enlightened very quickly. Not because I say it, because that's how it is. The problem is we lose it, right? Our habit is to get distracted. It's just sort of a habit we've trained in. And so the beauty of it is we can train out of it, is what I've been saying, right? And that's all meditation is. Training in the present, and that present gets deeper and deeper until we go beyond present, we go beyond past, and we go beyond future. And that's what we call reality from a Buddhist perspective. But that's another workshop. Not this week. So how was it? I just want to hear from some people. What came up for you?
I never focused on my stomach so intensely.
Yeah. What happened?
That was interesting. Just feeling it. And I've, like, over the past 6 months, lost, like, 30 pounds.
Wow, good for you. What are you doing? Tell me what to do.
Yeah, but I've realized that I've never like felt like after that, I'm like, oh, this is how I feel now, or felt my body in a way that's not just like either numbers on a scale or
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
More headspacey way.
So, were there? Did you notice like certain emotional qualities coming up around that, not just thoughts?
I guess, yeah, just more gratefulness to myself that I was able to do it.
Yeah.
And that it's something to be maintained.
Cool. Yeah. Good feedback. Anyone else?
I'm AJ.
Sorry, what?
I'm AJ. So it felt really good to go down into my body because in therapy I'm working on, because I told her there's a disconnection from here in my body. And so it's exactly what I've been working on, and I've also been working on like integrating my daily practice back into my life, and I just, sometimes I can fall kind of like into the heart center, but like not really, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it felt really good to be able to like just kind of go into that space and actually like be down here, you know?
Cool.
And that's been my goal, and I've literally been practicing every morning to just fall deeper in the body. And in that, I was able to feel some of the pain around what I'm working on.
Yeah.
Because as soon as I walk out of therapy, the pain, you know, all the feelings just kind of subside, and I disassociate to function throughout my day. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
So it was good as far as connecting.
Awesome.
Everybody. It's been a long time, if ever, you know.
Awesome. Good for you. Yeah. And it will only improve with just more habituating to it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll talk about it more tonight and tomorrow. But you know, part of this process is, they don't talk about it sometimes in traditional Buddhism, because they talk about afflictive emotions and the way dukkha arises in the mind and body. And really this word, I think Andrew uses it, I think a lot here, this word citta in Sanskrit really refers to a heart mind, not just a mind. So sometimes the translations end up just calling it mind, but it's really a heart mind, which for me means like a feeling mind, right? There's feeling, there's heart, there's a sense of vibrancy or awake, you know, like awareness, and there's mind. And normally, when we think of mind in the West or here in our culture, we think of thinking, right? And so we start to see it's much more, our experience as a human being is much more beyond just the thinking mind. Even though, like you're pointing out, which is also, by the way, I resonate with what you're saying, and I think a lot of people do, we're often stuck in this small little closet of the thinking mind, because this is the way our culture and society teaches us to interpret the world. It's really our only option most of the time. And it's a shame, because it's cutting us off from the other 95% of our human experience, right? When so much of our human experience happens outside the mind. So one thing I just want to say is that's wonderful. You're connecting more. And it'll continue to develop. And hopefully tonight, and I'll be able to give you more tools for that as well. It's sort of what I've tried to specialize in a little bit more, for just starting with myself. It just comes out of my own need for that healing, right? But yeah, hopefully it'll come out more tonight. Thanks. Yeah. Anyone else? Anyone struggle a lot or have any questions about or work with it?
Yeah, I've been doing kind of meditation for a while. This time, I really was aware of anxiety. Early on when I started meditating, as soon as I started mantra or whatever, you know, anxiety and my thoughts went crazy.
Yeah.
It was kind of a reminder of that.
Were you able to go into the lower part of the body, or was that hard for you?
It was hard this time.
Yeah.
But eventually, it was like a third of the way through, the thoughts and the anxiety started. I wasn't aware of it.
much as I was tonight, though, I guess.
You mean it, just because it lessened for you a little bit, is what it sounded like, yeah?
Yeah, well, there was more anxiety this time than usual. For some reason, maybe because I'm a little more involved.
Yeah. I mean, there is for me, too, because of my travel today and caffeine intake. So some of those things are good to recognize, too, around anxiety. I mean, it's one of my main struggles, personally, yeah, that I work with. I think it's probably what drew me to meditation originally. And it's workable. Yeah, it's gotten better for me. But then there's kind of these other components where we're a living, breathing person, like a sponge. And when we numb ourselves out more and more, in the sense, like I was saying, when we become disembodied and mainly functioning from the head or the thinking mind, then all the trauma and responses in the body are just spinning, right? Until we touch them and meet them, right? So this practice is a way to start to get used to meeting them. So it's kind of starting with tolerating it a little bit more and living or inhabiting in other spaces of the body that we don't normally enter. And then it's actually fully like, I don't like to use the word loving sometimes because it can be misconstrued as this like soft, gooey thing. I'm just talking about showing up, really. A lot of us think love is something, I don't know what people think, but sometimes I think love is like this gooey, kind of like fake, Hallmark card kind of thing. No. It's like the root of what we crave. It's the root of who we are and what we want. It's funny because at the root of everything, when I look at my life, whether it's anxiety or whether it's relationship issues or whether it's like what I want in my life and what I consider success or not success, it's all around love. It's all around my need to be seen and to connect with others, right? Very interesting. So at the end, we're very simple beings, but we make it really complicated. Our thinking mind likes to make it really complicated. I'm not speaking to you. I'm just kind of using this as a jump-off point. So I just wanted to say that, because how can we work into that? How can we then come into a really real interaction with that as a human being? Just honestly, not like in some goopy way. You know what I mean? Because I think a lot of people avoid this stuff, especially like those of us who are a little bit more like kind of on the macho side of things or more disconnected. It's easy to kind of discount some of this stuff, but it just means being a human being, being a person, you know? Anyone else? Yeah.
Like just bouncing around in my head, all the noise, you know, and I'm like, you're like focused on the stomach. I'm like, oh, I shouldn't eat a spicy food, and like, you know, like my eyes are popping open, like, you know, cartoon window shades, you know what I mean? Like, you can't be still, can't focus. It's just like discomfort. Yeah.
Never heard of that happening before. Totally weird. No, man, that's totally normal. Like, that's what happens to all of us. You know, when we show up to do this stuff. Because, like I was saying to this gentleman, that's what we've habituated to, is to, like, a mind that's distracted. And in a way, I kind of like to let people know it's not your fault, but it's your responsibility. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's what we get conditioned into, which means it's not our fault, but it's our responsibility what we're going to do with that. And so, totally, man. When I came to the cushion the first time, it's just, that's the toughest part, is the thinking mind. You know, we often call it like a monkey mind in Buddhism sometimes, because when you let a monkey into a temple, what they do is they jump and fuck shit up everywhere, right? I mean, really, like destroy the place, you know? Like a troop of monkeys in India or Nepal who, you know, make their way into a temple. And so that's what our mind can be like when left to its own devices, right? And then, you know, we numb that. We give it all sorts of fun things to play with, iPhones to poke at, sometimes drug addictions and other addiction issues, you know, to numb it or try to calm it down. But they don't ultimately satisfy. They don't work. So it's almost like that's the predicament, what you're talking about. And you're not alone, like I was saying. We all go through that. But we have to make a choice. And the choice is to just keep showing up and trying, right? That's what I was advocating. And tonight and tomorrow, what I hope you can take away with is you don't have to fight the thinking mind either. You don't have to fight the monkey. So maybe it's a good chance to launch into a little bit of my background a little bit. So those of you know, just through reading my bio, I've been at this about 20 years, Buddhist path and meditation and stuff like that. And I was a monk for 9 years. And, you know, a lot of people think, oh, wow, like that's, you know, being a monk is hard. That must have been, you know, you must know something. And no, I'm still a beginner. Like this is, you know, it's not like you do something and then magically everything's great. You know, I will admit, and this sometimes can be a turnoff, but I don't mean it this way. It does take hard work. But also, I think for the most part, I personally didn't have the tools to understand where my cultural conditioning was not allowing me to go deeper in the practice. And that's why I really like to come and share my experience and practice with people in the way I think of it now, and the way some of my teachers have taught me, and just beating my head against the wall what I figured out. Because my idea here is to save some of you the suffering I had to go through, right? And if that can happen, then all of that suffering is worthwhile, if I can save you the suffering of it. And part of it is the suffering of, what do we do when we're sitting, like, what's your name again?
Douglas.
Yeah. What you're pointing out, Douglas, you know, when we're sitting and the monkey mind just does not want to cooperate. And so I think I spent the first literally 10 years of practice fighting that monkey mind, you know, not only fighting it, like, you know, getting incensed, you know, wanting to quit sometimes, distracting myself, doing whatever I could to figure out how to deal with it. And what I finally figured out, not to my own device, this is also on the advice of some of my teachers, is I was trying to fight that monkey mind with monkey mind, which is impossible, right? It's like trying to fight hunger with fasting, you know, or something, you know? It's like, it doesn't work. So what I found, and why I entitled, you know, these talks about finding joy in embodied wisdom, I mean embodied awareness, is we have to come into the body. And this is another sticking point, because for us culturally, it's the place we don't usually go, like I've been pointing out, right? It's the place that is pretty scary for a lot of us. Because when we go to the body, also that's where our trauma lives. That's where our memories that we've shoved down there to try to forget live. And so this is why I advise it's good to have teachers and mentors and people and therapists and people to unpack this stuff with. But if you know, you take away from tonight the idea that it's also, there's nothing wrong with you, you know, you or anyone else in the room, for that coming up. Like, there's nothing wrong with us if we feel a sense of hollowness or unlovability. There's nothing wrong with you if whatever the issue that comes up, the sadness, the grief, right? The isolation, whatever it is. As human beings, we all go through this stuff. And so I think the first area is just recognizing we don't have to have as much shame in it as we think. And then when we allow that to happen, it's almost like a piece of the body can relax, in the sense that we can finally open to and go there and feel, right? But again, that's also not just you're doing it or you're not. This is a process, like I was saying. So it's the process of redirecting our mind and energy, our attention to the body again and again and again. And so the breath is so helpful here, because you can breathe into your feet, right? So probably before we close tonight, I'll have you breathe into different parts of your body just to experience that. You can breathe into your toes, even though it sounds a little weird. You can breathe into your head, into your heart, as we did breathing into the belly, which, by the way, I do that on purpose with you all, because when we do that, it really helps to soothe the nervous system. So there's a nerve that runs all the way down there, the vagus nerve, and this kind of breathing really helps to tone that, which helps us to relax, right? But again, what I'm emphasizing here is not just about relaxation. It's about getting to know ourselves. So it's like, how can we set ourselves up for an exploration and journey in the body of more curiosity and actually more self-care? And what's so tricky here is sometimes we don't care about ourselves. And so it's hard because you want to do the right thing, but it's easier to just do the opposite of what's going to actually help. And I know that, you know, probably equally as well as anyone here, you know? And so it's the choices we make every single day. And that's why, you know, for those of us who cultivate a meditation practice, we do it every day. It's not magic. It's just when you show up and do something, you're going to get better at it. You're going to get more, connected to that. So that's my big thing, I think, really tonight is about, is can you think about how you can get more into the body in the sense I'm talking about it, right? And all I mean is just feeling, right? Ending up inhabiting, especially the spaces of the lower body. Because like I said, not only do we overthink a lot of the time, but we're caught up here. Like if I ask you, where do you feel yourself right now? Can you point to that? You don't have to literally do it, but, you know, where do you feel yourself? If you had to point to one place. My guess is a lot of us are going to say it feels kind of like here behind the eyes, maybe somewhere in the face, maybe in the head. Maybe some of us would say here, you know, it depends on the person. But a majority of people, I think, we're like walking around, we're like heads walking around, right? This is not like how human beings lived for thousands and thousands of years, right? It's just not, right? We had more connection to the earth, more connection to the body in general. And I think we had other means for interpreting and working with our daily life besides the thinking mind. This is the trickiest thing because going back to my story a little bit, I think what attracted me to Buddhism originally was Buddhism is very good at systematizing and drawing out like a really robust scaffolding of why we suffer as a human being and then how to transcend that suffering. And it's very rich in language and study. And so I love that, you know, because I'm a very logical kind of cognitive-oriented person. So I love learning and kind of geeking out on that kind of stuff. But the more I geeked out on it, actually, the more my anxiety got worse, believe it or not. So it was like I was trying to do something to become happier and more settled, but it actually made my anxiety worse. And, you know, sometimes, I don't know how to put this, but it's like when my anxiety was up and like I thought I knew what I was talking about, you can pretty much, that's a good recipe for being an asshole, you know, right? But you can mask it by being a religious asshole, right? Which is worse than a typical asshole, I would say, right? So you can pontificate, you can do this, but it's not in the body, it's not felt, you know? And even as a monk, I think, in retreat, I struggled a lot. So I spent about 3 or 4 years of accumulated retreat alone as a monk, you know, over those 9 years. A lot of four-month retreats where I wouldn't see folks, I wouldn't... I would just, you know, someone would deliver food and I would just do my practice all day. And I don't know what my point was. But anyways, it was like psychics, it was like surgery all of the time. It was really hard. But I also sort of found out what my obstacles were, what my blocks were. Because you hit them and there's just, you can't move forward without having to deal with it, right? Anyways, maybe I'll open it up for a few other people because I forgot what my point was. Anybody else? What happened in your practice? For me, I like to do this a little bit more because it draws out sort of what you're working with and then the topics tonight I can apply. Yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting. I felt a lot of resistance initially because I feel like that's such a hub of where I'm mean to myself or have been historically.
You said mean?
Mean.
Yeah.
Touching my cat's belly came to mind, and it's like maybe I'm a sweet little animal too, and like you know, like, I can be okay.
And yeah.
So it went from, like, being really, like, rough to just, like, feeling, like, pretty comfortable. And, like, this is all right. Like,
wow.
In a not too long distance.
Awesome. Yeah, that's great. You know, it's just I'll say something on that because I think it's a key point around, like, we're taught awareness sometimes in meditation. Like, mindfulness is like, okay, be mindful, right, of your experience. But then what? And in Buddhism, in the path, in Buddhist practice, actually it's more concerned with the what. Like, why are we mindful, and what are we going to use that for? Then the mindfulness itself. But somehow it's become so preoccupied with attention and concentration and being mindful, and that this is going to somehow cure us. And I think it can help, because of course it the parasympathetic nervous system. It triggers the parasympathetic nervous system to calm down. You know, so we do get some relief of stress. But ultimately, it's about using mindful awareness to develop a more loving and compassionate response, you know? I think in the basic teachings of the Buddha, and it's a huge thing, if we can become aware of how we're reacting, soothe that in a way, love that, have compassion for that, then we actually have so much space and room to choose a compassionate response, a response that's actually healthy for ourselves and others. And so I'm a big fan of that. And that's why I think it's just shifting some of the languaging a little bit. Because it's like, I mean, I'd like to hear more from you, like, what shifted that for you. But to me, it's this element of, okay, I'm aware, now what? Like, there's the anxiety. That's there. Now what? And then for me now, it's how much can I love the shit out of that anxiety? You know what I'm saying? Which, up until maybe 5 years ago, that was really hard. And so that's what I mean about when we meet the body, there's a host of things we're going to come into contact with. There's a book I'm reading right now that I really like the way he frames this, where he says, he calls it dirty uncomfort and clean uncomfort. And dirty uncomfort is what we're pretty much in majority of the time, unfortunately, which is just our human life, the ups and downs, feeling anxious, feeling unsettled, feeling ungrounded, feeling grief, sadness, depression, whatever it is, right? Uncomfort. My leg hurts, whatever, right? And the dirtiness around it is we're not willing to own up to it. We're trying to run or avoid or suppress. And it's dirty because all it does is keep us locked in that uncomfort. It's like a stone that just keeps getting harder and harder and harder. And we see the results of this. We're seeing it now in society. I'm pretty clear this is where, you know, I mean, again, it's more complex than this, but there's a reason we're seeing more mass shootings. There's a reason we're seeing just obscene shows of violence. It's not like this never happened in the history of humanity, but as a culture, we don't know how to deal with our feelings and bodies at all, you know? But we can. It's actually not that difficult. It just takes some effort over time. And so this shift from, so again, that was the dirty kind of uncomfort. Now the clean uncomfort is just this. It's like acknowledging, hey, I'm feeling this. I'm anxious right now. This is happening. There's nothing wrong with you for that. You know, you're, like, this is the fundamental thing that I wish I could say it and everybody would feel it, but it's not that easy sometimes. We each have to dig it out in ourselves. There's nothing wrong with us. We're not a flawed human being. We're just a human being. You know? And there's something to that that's so kind and so open and refreshing when we're able to actually offer that to ourselves, which I'm just mirroring you because I'm hearing that in what you're saying, where it's just that shift from presence, acceptance, openness or sort of allowing, and compassion. The root word compassion really means to, like, go along with pain. Like, to meet it and to be with it, right? A lot of people, we mistake the words compassion sometimes for love, where we think compassion means, like, we have to be, like, really gooey with someone or kind of, like, fix their problem or something like that. No, it just means meeting something That is happening. That is not comfortable. And that's what I think this author meant by clean uncomfort. It's a really beautiful way to say it, because it's sort of like it's there, and we can either decide to, you know, be funky with it and not evolve as a human being, or choose to feel. So I'm a big fan of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and his work and his life. And one quote I read from him, which I really, I mean, I'm a fan of pretty much everything he says. But there's this one thing that I thought was really important where, and it relates to this idea of, I think, how we often reference ourselves as a flawed person, and then we deify people who we think aren't flawed. And we do this on really small levels and really big levels. Like small, like, ooh, my Instagram friend seems like she's getting a lot of likes. And, you know, so it's like, she must have her shit together or whatever, right? All the way to like a Dr. King or someone else we find, you know, are inspired by. But it's like, oh, I can never be like that. Like in religion, we often think of these people as saints, right? Like, and then we can sometimes deify them, which means like we're not worthy of that. And so Dr. King said this element around love where he said, I decided one day to choose love. And he said, and I show up every day choosing it. Or he tries, is kind of what he was saying. So it was so beautiful because it was like, oh, I just assumed this person was a really loving, you know, like not just loving, but he had an element of uncompromising, right? Uncompromising love. I just assumed that like he was a special person, born with a special brain or special body or his upbringing or all of the shit he had to face as a black man in this country. But he chose it. And it was like an active practice for him. So it really inspired me because I thought, oh, when I'm on the subway in New York and I'm in a shitty mood and I don't want to, you know, be around these people that I'm around, I have another choice. And so it's almost like we can start to treat our experience, treat our bodies and minds like an experiment. I think Buddhism has this element that I love so much where it's like we become a working lab, you know? So it's, you know, we like to say Buddhism is much less a religion, it's more of a spiritual path or whatever you want to call it, it doesn't matter. But the point is, you know, it gives us the tools. It's one of the traditions or lineages that gives us the tools to really use ourselves as a working lab. Meaning, when I'm in that subway one day, I was like, well, I'm just going to try to, I'll just be in a shitty mood. I'll just stay in this mood, kind of judgmental, little snarky and kind of like moody, right? And then just see how my day goes with that experience. And then through mindfulness, the next day, if I could recognize that mood and instead choose love, and I'm, by love, I mean a quality of recognizing I am not the only person in this train car, right? It's full of other people having a similar experience to me right now, at least just being on a crowded subway, right? I don't know what their internal experience is like. And there's an element of shift that happens there, right? And the next day I show up and I have the choice, if I remember, I forget a lot of times, right? I have the choice to do it again. And so this is where mindfulness and meditative awareness really help. But we have to remember where to direct it. So we become aware, okay, this is what's happening. What I usually advise people, the first place to aim love, you. Especially us, like in our culture. Because like I said, we have to look at our core. Now, our core meaning like, it's really hard to describe this. But I think quite a few of us experience like a core wound of unlovability. And it comes up as a feeling, as kind of a sense of hollowness. I can notice it more when I'm like, when I open Instagram like 30 times a day instead of 5. Or when I you know, go more into my food issues and sort of like binging on stuff a little bit more. I notice like, and I ask myself, well, what are you looking for at the bottom of that bag of popcorn? You know, at the end of that chocolate bar. And usually it's a hollowness. It's like a sense of that I'm feeding some thing that just can't feel fulfilled, right? That's the core wound of unlovability. And so what I notice when I'm in a bad mood, like I was saying, or I'm not sort of being present in a pro-social way with others, in a way that's, you know, I wouldn't just call it nice or kind. I would call it like, just like innate human values, that we are all worthy of love and care, and that I'm not a world of one. That's kind of how I put it often. And so I notice when I'm in that sense of hollowness, it's sort of like, it's just refeeding it, the self-habit, when I'm just only interested in my own experience and in reinforcing that and sort of feeding that. And it never makes me happy. So this is the real core questions to ask ourselves. I mean, when we're getting really real, we're not talking about just meditation for like peacing out. Who fucking cares? Like, this is stupid. I'm not kidding. It's really useless. I think it's not that different than just getting a, you might as well just get a massage, because at least your body will feel better at the end. Meditation kind of hurts, you know? Like, my legs hurt right now, you know? But my heart feels really good. You know, my body inside, I'm not talking skin and flesh, more like inside energy feels good, a little more open. Like, I felt coming in from the plane, a little constricted, kind of tired because it's late East Coast time. Did a little practice, connected with my body. Totally different. My body's still tired, but I don't care. I'm happy. So it's like what we often think is happiness. Actually, there's a quote from some famous Buddhist masters where they say, it sounds judgmental, but they actually mean it in a really compassionate way. Like, they're kind of crying, or they're sad as they say this, which is we're still working on our mind and heart, and we're still kind of a little confused, which is okay. They said, beings run towards suffering and run away from happiness. And it's a pretty profound quote, and it has a lot of different levels. I can't sort of hit all the levels tonight. But essentially what it's referring to is being confused and not understanding that we're habituated to run towards the things that actually are creating pain for us. And so the path of meditation, I could say the Buddhist path, is about learning to understand and get clear with what is truly causing pain. And so tonight, and thank you for your, sorry, I keep looking at you. It's not all about you, by the way. I'm just kind of, as you can tell, I'm using your statement to riff off of it. But what's so beautiful in that statement that you were saying was, just takes a little shift of mind, and actually a lot of change can happen. And so it doesn't mean we have to be meditating for years and years and years, or be a monk, actually, you know? It helps, I'll say. But when we come to the core of the body and we allow, and we start to break down some of those barriers of toughness and hardness, there's so much wealth in there. So it's kind of the wealth of our own vulnerability as well. So the more boundaries we put up, which again, I'm gonna say aren't your fault either. Probably our younger self, it was the only way we knew how to feel safe. It's like our body needed to find safety somehow in situations that were threatening, right? But now we can use these practices and meditation to let ourselves know, especially those parts of ourselves, know it's okay. Like, it's okay, you can heal now. Like, you don't have to stay in that pattern. So it's like almost talking to the 2, 3, 5, 10-year-old part of ourself that may still be stuck in a safety pattern of protection that's not allowing this deeper healing to take place. So ultimately, I feel the healing path dovetails or evolves into the spiritual path of understanding when we have this reference point that's so fixed and cut off from others, we suffer, right? But first we have to heal. First we have to understand and feel love, right? I don't know, I wish I could have another word for it, because like I said, I've kind of avoided like more of the hippy-dippy meditation stuff, because I was like kind of like been more traditional Buddhist, and a lot of people think of Buddhism as like a hippie kind of thing. It's really not, actually. Like, it's pretty hardcore. Like, if you meet some monks, like, they're not, especially Tibetan monks, like, these dudes have like knife cuts in their head, some of them. I'm not kidding. Because some, maybe I gotta explain that. not while they were monks, they didn't get them. But in Eastern Tibet, which is a kind of like, they're the cowboys of Tibet, right? Let's change it a little bit now because of the Chinese occupation there, but communist Chinese occupation. But, you know, I know monks when before they were monks, right? They were just nomads, you know, basically like kind of Tibetan cowboys. They would have knife fights, you know? So they come to the monastery when they shave their head, there's like scars here, you know? And so these guys are not like always peaceful. But of course, as monks, you know, they come from a culture where also community is still intact. So it's really easy to connect with their soft heart eventually, even though they might have been a little hard as a youngster or a teenager. And probably it was just to get a girl for the most part. Probably it wasn't really that they were that tough. But they just wanted love, right? Like all of us. But anyways, when they get to the monastery, they soften, right? So anyone else? If you have any questions too, we got about 10 minutes. So we can just open it up. If there was anything you're just like wondering, anything I've said, or what do you mean by this, or yeah. Yeah, no, that's great. And tomorrow we'll do more practice with that. I intend to do more practice tonight, but it went in a different direction. I would say we can thank our medieval, if we're a person who derives from a European-bodied genetic makeup, we can thank our medieval predecessors for that. That's what I usually say, right? I'm joking, but there is some history there where slowly there were certain elements of dominant cultures that decided to disconnect more and more from the earth. So you hear this is kind of when witchcraft became a thing and they would, you know, burn witches at the stake and stuff like that. This wasn't just like a horror film knockoff or like a Halloween thing. It was people who were connected to the earth and doing traditions and spiritual practices that were more rooted in that. And for some reason, the power structures at that time felt that was threatening to them. And so they tried to kill it, literally and figuratively. And what that ended up doing, in my opinion, and I'm not a historian, so I can't say matter of fact, but it actually disembodied and created a genetic trauma that's passed down. And America, in its current state, is also a result of that, the way America was created, in my opinion. And I don't mean to get political or socio-political, but just look at history. It's pretty obvious. And here, what's so interesting is we don't have to blame any one group or person. We're all in the mess now. See what I'm saying? And so we just have to figure this out together, what to do, in order to have a more productive, happier culture. And so I think, you know, that's the predicament I'm stating now. And I think it was just a massive disconnect from the earth. And I'm generalizing here too, because there's lots of groups that were not. But anyways, then when you add on to that, the way, like I was saying earlier, we're predominantly educated in the thinking mind. Because I don't think in general people are interested in how creative we can be. I would say the power structures around are not that interested in that. They're interested in what we can produce, right? Materially. So really to produce things, you have to be a good thinker. You don't have to be, if the more creative you are, the less productive you are, I think, in certain ways. So you have to be able to think rationally and logically, and that keeps the economic system going. So with that said, connecting back to the earth is just, it feels so good, like, as you probably noticed, right? Because it's just the reality of things, you know? The earth is our home. It's what we're born from, in a sense. It's what we'll go back to. It's what feeds us. We die without it, right? Literally. And our body is made up of it. The same elements of our body are what make up the elements of the stars and the earth. The mind and consciousness is a little different, but that's a different topic. So when we connect back to it, it's like we're rooting back to our home. And it feels really good because it feels truthful. It's our home, and it's something that's not cognitive, That's one reason I really like doing it in practice, is we don't have to think about it so much. We can just physically connect and the body can ground. So, you know, there's so much to say in this area, so maybe it'll continue on to tomorrow, but just one last thing I'll say is, you know, an element of anxiety, depression, all the ailments we're seeing as modern people that have just grown in human beings, and we're struggling with a lot as a culture, I do feel it's part of the reasoning around that, of why that's happening, is because of the disembodiment from the earth. And the way we're disembodied in the body is directly related to the way we cut off from the earth. So indigenous cultures, I think they're kind of like, you know, I grew up Jewish, so they're just like, oy vey, do you guys know what that means? They just say, oy vey, I can't believe these people don't understand this. But again, it's not our fault. We're just conditioned through it, right? And so, but like I said, it is our responsibility to correct it. And we're human beings. We're all indigenous to somewhere originally, right? And so we can connect back with that. This is why I really love ancestor practices. I think part of the big healing in America will happen too is when we begin to, part of our ancestral, part of our actual American makeup, born from a lot of suffering and oppression, is African-American traditions, which actually can help to connect us back to the earth, like ancestor practice, which comes from African religion. So there's all kinds of tools like that. And we could also search out our own. Like if we're Irish, we can search out our ancestor practices they did. You know, we can search out what they did to connect with the earth. It doesn't have to become like we become a witch. Just be, you know, it could just be some practical things. I think just really simple stuff like just sitting on the earth, you know, doing what we're doing, just connecting and feeling it. Because part of the ideological damage, and this is why we're having huge, you know, issues with climate change now, is it's been successful in an ideological campaign that the earth is a cold, lifeless thing we can just take from, right? And so this colonial people used this to then dehumanize indigenous people because they just viewed indigenous people as an extension of the earth. And so we can take from the earth and we can also rape and take from indigenous people and steal their land and destroy their culture and pretty much wipe them out. That was the whole deal. So anyways, this is also up for debate. I'm not saying this is like matter of fact. It's just in my understanding of this, the reason I bring it up is because until we acknowledge this stuff and start to talk about it, we're not going to also be able to heal. So it's like a co-healing that could take place, but it's not through blame. That's the big difference. It's not through blame. But, you know, there's a lot of layers of this. So it's kind of, first layer, just connect with your body, connect with yourself. Second layer, connect that to the earth. It's our human right. So I don't know if that's where you were,
yeah.
If I answered your anything. Probably a lot more than you were asking for. But just kind of my area of exploration these days. And it's funny because, like, I can just talk from my own experience, right? Which isn't so much getting into these more controversial areas for some of us. Is when I get more into my body, I just feel better. And I feel more human. I feel more alive. I also feel more connected to the earth. I feel more connected to people around me. It's not that I don't see differences or have preferences or judgments. It's just I see a human being behind the person I'm looking at, even if I don't like them. You know what I mean? I can see someone else who just wants happiness like me. And there's something really simple about it. It's not like I had to condition or reprogram my mind into that. I just have to come into the body and feel. Because there's an element, you know, where compassion is allowed to be. And if I'm not afraid of my emotions anymore, and I'm not saying I'm not completely afraid, but I'm less afraid because I've faced them to a certain degree. So if we face them, we become less afraid. What else is there to fear? And so fear is driving a lot of the behaviors too. Actually, in Buddhist psychology, which probably modern psychology would agree with to a certain extent, really it's like fear is our primary suffering, you know? And part of this is actually warranted in the sense that, like, our biology also drives fear, meaning you're going to die if you walk out in front of a truck, right? So you probably should be afraid of that to a certain extent. But then the problem is those rational fears, they become indistinguishable with the irrational fears, which then drive us into behaviors that are not compassionate and loving for ourselves and others. So part of this path is when we get into the body more, we're able to distinguish more between those irrational fears and rational fears, because we heal, right? So maybe we'll stop there. It's 8:59. I feel like I finally feel like I know what I want to say. So took me a few minutes to like get back online from the plane ride, but I feel like we have to stop now. So really, my idea is just to continue the conversation tomorrow, and then we're going to be doing a lot more practice. So for those of you who were like got a little bit of taste of what we were doing, I'm going to give you more tools for this tomorrow. If you didn't get a taste, we're going to work with some obstacles also of like why we couldn't access that or how to work with those obstacles. Does that sound good? And yeah, I just feel like we just hang out with you guys in my living room. That's so it's kind of, I don't want to leave. Yeah.
Do you have to register for
tomorrow?
No, you can just show up.
Cool. 10 o'clock.
Yeah. 10 a.m. It's 10 to 3, and we'll probably take a lunch break around like 12:30 or something like that for like an hour or 45 minutes.
Yeah.
So real quick, I'd just like to kind of end sessions by closing it out. I know I went to a lot of words tonight. Tomorrow will hopefully be a little less wordy, more experiential, but just come into your body for a second. It doesn't have to be some big thing. Feel the earth. Feel your legs. Feel your abdomen, feel your chest, shoulders, head. Can you just offer the presence of compassion? Or I should say a compassionate presence, just to whatever you're feeling right now, which means just being with it. You don't have to do anything special. Just be with your experience. If you're tired, be with that. If you're bored, be with that. If you're happy and inspired, be with that. I personally don't care what you're feeling. It's all the same to me. But I care about you, and I care about your well-being and joy, happiness. And so with that, I want you to think of one person you're close to. And if you can't think of a person, it can be a pet. Sometimes pets are a lot cuter anyways. And I just want you to open your heart to them in connection with opening your heart to yourself as much as you can. And if you got any insights out of tonight, just imagine you're sharing that with them. It's lighting their light up. It's lighting their life up. You can imagine them smiling or taking joy in that. Great. Well, thank you all so much.